Welcome back in hour number three of our radio program. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. What a year it was for the New York Football Giants back in the playoffs. They win a postseason game up against the Vikings before losing to Philadelphia in the divisional round. And now joining us, just wrapped up his rookie season with the Giants as a safety, fourth round pick out of Iowa, is of course Dane Belton. Dane, thanks for coming in. Appreciate the time. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you guys for having me.
So how do you kind of look back? Rookie year, I know it got off to an unfortunate start with the broken collarbone, but you quickly got back to the field. How do you kind of recap what your rookie season was like?
It was a huge blessing, you know, being able to go out there, like you said, come back from an injury and still be able to play meaningful football for the team and help them win. And it was a great experience overall, you know, successful season and looking forward to the future.
When did you get comfortable? Were you comfortable right away or did it take a little bit?
I would say it took a little bit, you know, especially just coming in straight from college. You go right into rookie minicamp and OTAs and things like that. But I definitely think it was a quick level of comfortability that came in, and especially the guys helping me and just being able to, you know, teach me things and show me the ropes and get comfortable was really the big thing.
Right now, everyone's going through the draft process. Mm-hmm. The combine just wrapped up. I always poke fun at the combine because it's, if you could run a 40 and throw up a bunch of reps on the bench press, all of a sudden you shoot up the draft board. It's almost like the film all throughout the years does not matter. But how did you kind of look back at your draft experience, mm-hmm, and what that process was like, showcasing what you could do to all these teams that would be interested in you?
Yeah, it was a period in my life where everything you did was amplified.
Yeah.
And just going through that experience.
You take a walk. Oh, he didn't take a walk fast enough.
Exactly.
Stupid.
No, exactly. And yeah, everything is measured. Everything is bigger than what it normally is. But like I said, it was a blessing to be in that position, be able to showcase my abilities at the combine, you know, pro days, being able to talk to different organizations was huge. And like you said, the combine, it's a crazy weekend, but you know, at the end of the day, it's a blessing to be in that position.
Did you get asked any weird things? Yeah, we hear about that all the time.
Oh, man. I don't even remember. I guess nothing really crazy.
Staring contests, rock, paper, scissors, shoot?
No, nothing like that. It was crazy. I had a formal with the 49ers, and John Lynch, obviously the GM, and he, you know, he was a safety for my hometown team, so being able to talk to him. And it was like after the meeting, one of the guys was like, "You know who that is?" And he's like, I was like, "Yeah, it's John Lynch." He was like, "Okay, just making sure you knew your history." I was like, "How could I not know that?" But you know, other than that, no, it was a good experience.
So you grew up as a Buccaneers fan?
Yes, sir.
Who were some of your favorite players growing up?
Oh, man, when I was growing up, we were pretty bad. So, you know, we had guys like Josh Freeman, guys like that. So definitely Rondé Barber was my favorite, just playing defensive back, you know, as good as he was, being able to watch him, and I would say definitely him.
Well, we work with his brother Tiki, yeah, so we always have to get pitted into a corner. Who's your favorite barber? That's always a struggle, and I had to tell Rondé at the Super Bowl that I go with Tiki just because I see him every day. Then Rondé gave me chicken, though. He gave me some church's chicken. So
oh, yeah.
Tried to fatten me up to win me over. That usually does it. Dane Belton here with us in studio. Other players growing up as a kid, like who were some guys that you kind of just gravitated towards and just found yourself watching, whether it was on YouTube or a lot on Sundays?
Yeah, I would say the main guy was Megatron. You know, being able to watch him, just witness like his production and all he did was crazy. I used to get, you know, his hats, you know, the Megatron Nike snapbacks, and definitely wanted to be him. But yeah, that was the guy that sticks out the most, just being able to watch him. And obviously when I was younger, Troy Polamalu, you know, being able to watch him as a safety and make the plays he did and make some crazy plays at that were definitely two guys I love to watch and still love to go back and watch the highlights.
And it's still funny to this day when I think of Megatron, I think of like three defensive backs trying to guard him.
And he just goes up top. Yeah.
And it didn't matter. And Polamalu, you just knew where he was at all time, yeah, because he could destroy your day, but that hair was just awesome.
Most definitely.
Dane Belton here with us in studio. So you're going through this dream. Obviously, you grow up and you're a big football fan and you're watching all these players. When did you start to say, because like everyone grows up as a kid and says they want to be an athlete, but when did you start to realize, I could actually do this, I could play at the next level in the NFL?
Yeah, I would say it was after my freshman year of high school. You know, I moved up to varsity, and it was that spring. You know, we have a lot of, in Florida, we have spring period where a lot of college coaches are coming down, and just being able to talk to coaches and be like, you know, we like you even though you're so young, and just being able to realize then that I could play at the college level, and then if I could play at college and perform well, I could ultimately get to the NFL. So that was really when it started to become reality, and from there, you know, it was just about I really wanted it, so I had to, you know, do everything I needed to do to get there. So I would say that's when it started to become a reality.
How many positions did you play in high school?
Oh, man, I played safety. I played receiver, wildcat, quarterback. I was on every special teams. I returned. I was actually the punter my senior year.
Wow.
Yeah, so definitely.
Could you boot the ball?
I had a good amount of punts over 50, some down inside the five. So, hey, I got the job done. So, but it definitely played a lot of positions.
So now you have a year under your belt. You probably have a relationship with Coach Daboll. Do you go into his office at one point and go, Coach, if you need me down inside the red zone, I could use probably the few extra bucks in the contract negotiations down the road. Let me fire off a pass.
Oh, man, I think it's a little bit different in this level. But and we have guys like Isaiah and different receivers that can, you know, win those jump balls. So, you know, I definitely probably stick to safety. But hey, if that opportunity comes, I would definitely jump on it.
Dane Belton here with us. So your relationship with Brian Daboll, just take us behind the scenes a little bit. Obviously, we've known about him for a long time. He finally gets that opportunity to become a head coach in this league, and he blew it out of the park in year number one. Just being in that locker room, what was the vibe and what was the culture like?
Oh, man, the culture was crazy. I loved it. You know, being a rookie, I wasn't here to see the last regime, but just talking to the guys that have been here, just talking, seeing the difference that they talk about and how much they love Daboll and this culture he has. It's just, you know, there's nothing like, you know, the energy he brings in every meeting, every win in the locker room, even when we lose, just being able to command the locker room and everyone wants to listen to him. And, you know, for my first year, I couldn't ask for anything more.
I think a lot of times throughout the year, people were just waiting for the Giants to fall off because going into the year, no one really expected much, especially with the new regime coming in and the state of the roster. Did you guys take that personally? Because even when you guys were having success, it was, yeah, the Giants are playing really well, but they're not one of the better teams in the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wouldn't say we took it personally. I would say we all knew, you know, what was being said about us, you know, the expectations coming in the year. And even when the year started, you know, that we weren't going to keep that streak or the, you know, the hotness alive. But, you know, for us, you know, being professionals, you know, we just got to go out there and do our jobs. So at the end of the day, we weren't reading too much of what people were saying. We knew what we control our own destiny. So, you know, we knew what they were saying, but at the end of the day, you know, it really didn't affect us that much.
Walking into that locker room, what do you remember about that? Were you starstruck at all? I know it's a business, but there's also a personal side of it.
I wouldn't say I was starstruck, but there's definitely people like, okay, that's so-and-so. I would say
Saquon's over there. Wow, Saquon, holy crap.
Leo, guys like that. I know in the team meeting, I sit next to Adoree Jackson every day. So, you know, my childhood self would have went crazy knowing that later on in life I'd sit next to Adoree Jackson. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're all guys and we just hang out and everyone's cool. So it's not like anyone's like above anyone else in that aspect. They treat each other. So it's definitely a good vibe around the locker room.
Is it easy to win over Dexter Lawrence? Because that dude is just a mauler on the field. And I think he's the best player on the Giants, honestly.
Yeah, he's a great player. I recall like coming in. I was always like quiet, you know, sitting in the meeting rooms, and he always would look at me with this like strange face, like, I'm going to figure you out one day. And he always come up to me like, you're so quiet, like, well, what are you thinking? But great dude, you know, just a great leader we have. And like you said, a phenomenal player that, you know, I'm glad to have on our side.
What was this last week like for you? Because now you get to experience the business side of it. And I know you could only control what you could control, but there's all these rumors. Is Daniel Jones going to get franchise tag? Is he going to get a contract? Saquon Barkley, is he going to be back on the team? Is he going to hit the market? And you find out Saquon gets the tag and Daniel Jones gets the four-year deal.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I kind of found myself in a spot where I was like almost like a fan where I'm checking Twitter like, did they sign him yet? I'm trying to pick up on the news, but, you know, definitely had to take a step back. But, you know, because I wanted to make sure those guys were coming back. You know, those are two phenomenal players we have, two great leaders and great guys to be around. So I definitely, you know, wanted them back, you know, even as just a rookie. But definitely being able to see those guys come back and sign the deal. And I know Saquon's tagged and hopefully they work out a deal with him too. But just having those guys back is awesome for our team.
What do you say? Because Daniel Jones gets the contract and then right away people go to Twitter and they're like, oh, he's not worth the money. He's not going to be a great quarterback in the league. What do you say to the people that doubt Daniel Jones?
Yeah, I would say there's so many people that doubt him, but they don't see the work he puts in and day out, you know, the hours he spends and just the amount of production he has just for our team, you know, this past year. And me being able to see him for 1 year was like, yeah, I kind of knew right away, like, this guy's legit. And I would love to have him as my quarterback, so I'm glad I do. And so just for them to just really watch and see, you know, I feel like we're only at the beginning of what we can be as a team, and it's just only going to go up from here.
What's the message? You being in that locker room, you have a year under your belt, and you guys exceeded all expectations last year. Some people may say, oh, there's going to be regression with the Giants. We got to see what they do in the offseason. You being a player, what's your message to the fan base about what this team could be next year?
Yeah, I would say the big thing is, you know, we exceeded outside expectation, but we didn't exceed our expectation, and that's to win. you know, go 1-0 every week and ultimately try to win a championship. So I would say for the fan base, just understand that, you know, we're a work in progress, but at the end of the day, we're striving for that championship and that Super Bowl. So, you know, until we get there, we won't be satisfied.
Dane Belton here with us in studio from the Giants. Your game, individually, what are you working to improve on this offseason?
Yeah, really just every aspect. You know, I'm trying to, first and foremost, get my body fully healthy. You know, like you said, coming back from injury, I was still lingering a little bit, just trying to get back there. And after that, you know, just continue to sharpen the mental side, you know, being able to see schemes that offenses do, you know, after a year under my belt. And just ultimately, you know, just getting more physical as far as, like, getting bigger, faster, stronger. I feel like those things you can never get, you know, too much of. So really just a well-rounded offseason will really help me out.
What's your best Wink story, Wink Martindale?
Oh, man. It's so many stories I call back on. But I would say just he tells us a lot of stories. I remember in London, he told us a story when he met Rihanna. And it was a,
really?
it was a crazy story. And
I can't see him and Rihanna meshing, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, exactly. And it was like when he told us, we were looking like, is this real? And, like, he's probably telling the truth. So, you know, just being him, just telling all these different stories, he's a great guy to have as our, you know, leader in defense.
When you got that call, fourth round pick, Giants, you know, we've had Joe Shane on this show a lot. I like what he's done so far in year one. What do you remember about when you got that call? Where were you and how did it kind of all go down?
Yeah, I was back home in Tampa, Florida, you know, surrounded by my close family, and just being able to get that call, having taken a 30 visit, less than 2 weeks before the draft, and just being so familiar with, you know, with those guys and getting that call and hearing Joe first and talking to Daves and Wink was just like, you know, I'm ready to go. You know, I had a shirt and hat from the 30 visit. So right when I got drafted, I threw it on. So, you know, I was sporting the Giant blue. But it was just a great call, great, you know, experience to be there with my family and experience all the hard work that, you know, they've done to get me where I'm at, just culminating to that point.
New York could be tough, but it's so rewarding. Mm-hmm. And you guys made this city, like, proud again of the Giants for where it was the last 4 or 5 years or so. That New York experience so far, like, what do you take away from 1 year in New York?
I would say it's a great city. You know, I love, like you said, the fans have gone through a lot. So to see us win and being my first year out, that's the only thing I've experienced. So to see how joyous they get when they are able to talk to us and, like, man, you guys, you don't know what you mean to us. So just being able to hear that and know that, you know, we are doing this for more than ourselves, doing this for more than just the team, but, you know, the people are behind us. So just hearing that support is everything to us.
What's your favorite individual memory from this year?
Oh, man, I would say...
got to be the pick, the first pick, right? Your first career interception?
I was about to say, it probably is, definitely. I would say one is I got a quarterback hit on Aaron Rodgers in London, and that was like, you know, those are guys you look up to, not Aaron Rodgers, but I'll definitely go with the pick, the best one for sure.
And then the playoff win, that plane ride back must have been awesome.
Oh, man, it was great. That environment in the locker room, too, not even, 2 weeks after we lost to them and we knew that we were going to come back and play them again. That was just a great experience for sure.
And I'll be impressed with Daboll. Dave's got some good dance moves in the locker room.
Oh, yeah. I remember the first time I saw it was after the Tennessee game. And when I saw that and just the way I was like, yeah, this guy's legit.
But that's what was so fun about your team. Early on, you guys sent a message that you were going to compete. Mm-hmm. Like, we didn't know if you're going to be a great team, but you guys were going to compete, and it didn't matter. You had a few comebacks like that. The Ravens game, I remember, too, where you're down in the fourth quarter, and when your back's up against the wall, it was just, bam, it's go time. You can't make any more mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely, and that's what we pride ourselves on, being able to keep fighting. As long as there's time on the clock, you know, there's an opportunity for us in the game. So that was what, you know, the culture Dave's instilled in us, that, you know, whenever we're on the field, we're going to do our best, and we're going to, you know, produce. So that's really what we just did week in and week out.
When you reach your full potential, what football player can Dane Belton be like?
Oh, man. I wouldn't want to compare myself to anyone. I feel like there's different parts of my game that I like to emulate after people. But at the end of the day, when I reach my full potential, you know, that's going to be a completely different player, completely different person. So, you know, that's what I strive for every day.
So describe the type of player that you envision yourself being.
Yeah, I would say, you know, the plays like Polamalu, the range like Ed Reed, you know, being able to be physical like Brian Dawkins, even though he's an Eagles player. But, you know, just guys like that emulate after my game after, and just being able to do that on the field is what I look for.
Why'd you go to Iowa? Wondering. Great program, but.
Yeah, it was a lot of things that went into it. You know, I had a lot of offers, but it was just all things included. You know, this was my ultimate goal, to be playing in the NFL. And, you know, the way they, you know, produce, especially DBs, and develop them, from young guys, walk-ons, former receivers, and taking them, I knew the coach could do it with me. And he's a great coach. He's the defensive coordinator and the DB coach. So being able to play under him was amazing.
Before we let you run, so we know about what you could do on the field, we know your background. What do you like off the field? Dane Belton, when he got some personal time, what are you doing?
I'm hanging out. You know, I like to play video games. I'm on Call of Duty right now, just hanging out. Read a little bit, and really other than that, just chill, you know, take advantage of the free time.
If you weren't playing football, what would you be doing professionally?
I would say something around the sport of football. I just love the game so much. You know, I'll definitely have looked, just thought about coaching when I'm done, and other than that, being an entrepreneur with some type of business that revolves around, you know, training athletes or being able to get an athlete to his best potential.
Well, Dane Belton, nice to meet you. Congrats on year one and good luck coming up the rest of the way.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show. Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
All righty, so let's start things off in Arizona. So Kelvin Beachum, who was on the Cardinals this past season, and he is now a free agent, has been around the league forever. So this is not like a young player just popping off. This is a veteran. This is someone that's well-respected in that locker room. And he's about to enter free agency. Like, is there a chance he retires? I guess. Kelvin Beachum, he's got to be, what, like 33 now, I would say? Yeah, he's 33 years old, so he's been in the league for a long time. That's a good guess by me, by the way. Just like, I got to be like 33? I remember I interviewed him when I was first started off in this industry years back when he was playing with the Jets. But he's bounced around Steelers, Jaguars, Jets, and Cardinals. So we'll see how much longer he does play. But Hickey, I'm going to assume, and we'll play the audio in just a second, that he's not going to be back in Arizona.
He didn't go as far, I guess, to say trash Kyler Murray, but he kind of kept it real enough where, like I said, he knows he's on the way out and kind of speaking more freely than he would if he thought he's going to be back.
Well, before even, I just read the quote. I did not listen to it yet. I like to save that for this segment. But just based off the way that the quotes did read, he's definitely sending a message. And he's definitely giving Kyler Murray probably the tough love that he needs. And the only problem is the only time we've seen Kyler Murray really get a lot of blowback, because for most of the time it's just been so positive. Guy's a video game player, was after that playoff game against the Rams, and he didn't handle that all that well. It was very childish and immature and petulant. So here is Kelvin Beachum on Arizona Sports out in the desert on, what is that, 98.7, I believe, saying that Kyler Murray needs to mature.
There's a lot of criticism of Kyler. Mm-hmm. What does he have to do, in your opinion, to be great?
Grow up.
Give me an example.
Be a man and grow up. Like, it's not complicated. You got to be a leader of men, period.
And he's not right now.
He's maturing.
But he's not there yet.
He's not there. It's not yet. It's not a completed process.
It's not a completed process.
Be a leader of men. He's got all the tools, you think?
He has all the tools, man. If some guy can throw off one leg, he can, you know, throw it a mile. He can run faster than anybody else on the field.
He just lacks the leadership.
He's put together. I didn't say he lacks the leadership. I just think he needs to grow up a little bit. And I think if he has the ability and the willingness to grow up, he's going to be just fine.
So he's basically saying he can do it, but it's a want to do it type of situation.
Especially with leadership, you got to want to be the leader. And it does not sound like Kyler wanted to do that last year.
And I don't know about you, it doesn't feel like Jonathan Gannon is going to be this big authoritative voice when he walks up the first day and he's dapping up all the players. And I forget which, was it Rondell Moore? He said, boop, 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 boop. Psh, explosions, big plays. I think Jonathan Gannon's more of a player-friendly type of coach.
Maybe the opposite of a Mike Vrabel, would you say?
Yeah, that's fair. Or a Mike Tomlin. Like Mike Tomlin, Mike Tomlin and Mike Vrabel are two great examples. They are tough coaches to play for. They know how to relate to their players, but no one wants to cross over either Mike Tomlin or Mike Vrabel because you will get chewed out. You know, it's kind of like I worked at a sleepaway camp once, and I was in charge of all the 7th and 8th grade boys in the staff. So I was in charge of like 50 campers and then probably like 15 staff members. And they liked me, but I could also be tough in terms of they liked me and we gelled, but when I got mad about something, I thought it was more powerful and they listened more because they liked you and they respected you at the end of the day. And that's what I think like Mike Vrabel and Mike Tomlin are. They get along with their players. They know how to relate to their players. But when coach yells and when you messed up, coach tells you that. And then you kind of feel that motivation of, okay, I'm not going to walk over coach. I'm going to do what he says.
And it feels like, especially kind of in Hard Knocks too, you kind of got a better sense of it than just being on the outside. It definitely felt like Cliff was trying to be Kyler's friend.
Yeah. And Gannon feels like more of a doormat probably.
Hope not for the Cardinals' sake, but if you're right, Kevin Beachin is going to be right and not much is going
to
change.
Now, to be fair, though, if Gannon is similar to Sirianni, we all thought Sirianni was like this doormat as well, and those players listen to everything that Sirianni says. He was just wearing jerseys, and we thought, okay, you're really going to never respect a coach like that, especially with the flower analogy in a city like Philadelphia, and ended up being the case that they were just in the Super Bowl, and if the defense could make a stop, they would have won the Super Bowl. Let's hear one more from Kelvin Beachum. He says Kyler Murray has to recognize the responsibilities on his shoulders as the franchise QB.
They paid him for a reason. They paid him because of his talent, and he has the ability to lead. It's just when you're in that position, we need you to lead more. Like, you're the face of the franchise. You got to lead more. You got to lead in every single capacity of leadership. And that's what they look for out of a franchise quarterback. They've given you, you know, $500 million, like,
new coaching staff may be able to push him in a different way than the old coaching staff did.
We'll see. We'll see. Kyler's his own individual. He's his own person. He beats his own drum, which has made him what he is today. But at the end of the day, you have to be able to lead an entire organization. You got to lead a team. And there's a lot of weight on his shoulders. I mean, he's young, but that comes with the territory. And that comes with being a franchise quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals. You're tasked with being that leader.
When I just listen back to that and I think about the future, I wouldn't have any sympathy for Kyler Murray, but Hickey, Kyler Murray's in a tough spot right now because you're going to be coming off an injury. We don't know when you're going to play next year. And I always say this about quarterbacks. When you come off an ACL injury, I don't think you get back to your normal self at a full 100% until the following year. Because there is a mental component of that as well that you have to overcome, and that doesn't get washed away until you get hit a bunch of times and then to see how your body does respond and recover from that. But the pressure's going to be there on Kyler Murray because all the excuses are out the door now when Cliff Kingsbury is no longer there as the head coach, Steve Keim is no longer there as the new GM, and this is a new regime that Monty Austinfort and Jonathan Gannon, sure, they want you to succeed because you're already paid, but they don't have any attachments to you. So for Kyler Murray, he's going to have to go very quickly and show why he's worth it very quickly. But who knows, A, when he gets on the field next year, and then when he is back, how much rust he does have to knock off.
That and also, too, it goes back to even last year when they paid him. Like, no one doubts Kyler Murray's talent. But almost everyone universally, when he got paid, was like, oh, I don't know about this. And it almost came too quick, too fast for him, in part because, like you said, a lot of the responsibilities as a franchise quarterback comes with being the face, carrying the team. And the only thing we saw with Kyler Murray and the Cardinals was they'd have to hot starts and completely fold down the stretch. Anytime the going got tough, they would collapse. And it started with their quarterback. And it's like, when you get that money, sure, it's great for your bank account, but also with that comes a ton of pressure, like Kelvin Beachum was talking about, all the responsibility. And doesn't seem like either Kyler Murray wants to acknowledge that part, is ready to take on that part. And it just goes back to why they raced into this too quickly before he was actually truly ready to earn that money.
And not only that, you look at Kyler Murray right now, it's just even the clause on the contract, remember? Where we gave him the money, but we don't trust him to study, so we have to put a study clause in there. Oh, then that gets released. Okay, we take the study clause out. You give the guy all the money and you don't trust him to put in the work, that's a bad sign. And if he does not play well next year, then 2024, it's a make or break year. And you look at the way the dead cap is structured, this year, we'll see when he gets back, it's $97 million. Then in 2024, it's $81 million on the dead cap. If he doesn't play well in 2024, Hickey, where that's a year and a half probably after the injury, 2025, the dead cap falls to $33 million. And years ago, we would say, oh, $33 million in dead cap. You got to keep the guy on the roster. A lot of other teams have shown you, no, you don't, especially at that position. If Murray doesn't turn this around quickly, maybe as soon as 2025, you could see this new regime say, bye-bye, snip, snip, gone, you're cut, and then you're looking for a new quarterback out of the desert.
New GM, new head coach, no ties to him in a year and a half. Like I said, I think you're 100% right when it comes to like having a full year back from the ACL. So it's tough to truly judge him in terms of next year. Obviously, leadership be able to, but on the field-wise, you really not. It's going to kind of be a wash. But you're right, 2024, if we're seeing the same old, he doesn't grow as a leader, doesn't grow as a person, I think he's gone.
Mike Lombardi says the Rams are trying to trade Matthew Stafford, this courtesy of the Pat McAfee Show.
Oh, Matt Stafford's fully available. For Matt Stafford, they would love to trade. They can't do it because he's got $57 million guaranteed. He got $57 million coming to him no matter what. The Rams, what are they going to do? They're trying to get out from it. So I don't really want to hear the that, oh, we're not trying to trade him. Yes, you are. You've called teams. I know this.
So, like, that's kind of, to me, a little misleading. They want to trade him, but they know that no one's going to trade for him right now with the way that contract is structured. It's like, all right, what does that actually mean then, Hickey?
Well, I think it shows you what they're trying. I think what their intentions are very interesting because, again, we talked about earlier this week. Sean McVay comes back. You assume he's coming back to run it back. And now
I don't think Sean McVay knows what he wants. I really do believe Sean McVay wants to retire. Just at the end of the day, got cold feet and didn't go to television.
What are you going to do then? If you get your wish, you trade Matthew Stafford. Is it part of a Lamar deal? Maybe. Outside of that, if you just trade him for picks, what is your plan? You going to be aggressive in the draft?
Well, how can you?
You going to try to get Hendon Hooker in round 2? Like, I don't know what their plan is.
I know that we all poo-poo the salary cap these days, and I probably do it more than anybody. If you get rid of Stafford, you still have a large dead cap hit. How do you then afford both the salary that you're going to have to pay Lamar Jackson and Stafford? It's not going to happen anyway because Stafford's not going to get traded, but that number still means something.
It does. And again, no one's better at the cap than the Rams.
And but that like, team
what are you
stinks
trying to,
right
like,
now.
What is then your, are you just ripping it down?
Like, that roster is big names. Stafford, Cooper Kupp, Aaron Donald. That roster is not good. It's in a bad spot right now. They went all in. It worked. Ramsey's going to get traded. Bobby Wagner already told you, I don't believe this is working. I want to go win somewhere. I'm out. You're getting rid of Allen Robinson as well. Their offensive line stinks. So I look at the Rams. This is 1 foot in, 1 foot out. And I still don't know what the end goal is here.
I know this. I think it was. This was kind of surrounding Sean Payton. He retired 2 years ago. But wasn't the reports when Sean McVay was away and contemplating retirement that he didn't want to rebuild, didn't want to go through a rebuild?
Yeah.
Wasn't that him? What are we doing then? Like, what? If you wanted to retire in part to avoid going 4-13 again, why'd you come back? Because, like I said, ever since he came back, they have done nothing in terms of trying to build themselves into a winner. It's been instead, let's tear it down and get rid of any and every asset we have right now. At least that's what we're trying to do.
It was from Mike Florio in January. Sean McVay wants no part of Rams rebuild.
And now it's like Bobby Wagner gone, Jalen Ramsey on the block. Matthew Stafford might be traded. Like, what?
I know he just got married, Sean McVay. Maybe he's afraid to just go home. Too much time at home is not good for anyone.
He does not seem like the guy who will do well with a lot of free time.
Like, go look at Philip Rivers. All of a sudden, he wants to come back. Yeah, you have 9,000 children in your home all the time.
That's true.
That ain't easy.
That's true.
And that's McVay with, to my knowledge, no kids and a smoking hot wife. I would take all the alone time, if you ask me, with her.
Oh, I'd take that money and run.
Yeah.
I would retire and I would never look back.
And McVay's not a bad guy. You put some makeup on him, though, like, you're living a good life there if you're Sean out in L.A. And then whenever you want to go coach again, you go coach again. That's a rough spot for McVay. But I actually respect that he stayed if he's willing to see this through. If it's like Sean Payton where it's, oh, I'm going to stay for a year and then, oh, all right, it didn't work, I'm out, and then I'll go another place, then screw off.
Raheem Morris succession plan coming 2024. Get ready.
Yeah. It's going to be like Bruce Arians. I always envisioned it handing over to Todd. All right, Daniel Jones on if he feels extra pressure to perform after getting the contract.
I've always felt that responsibility and playing this position, especially for a team like the New York Giants in the city, you know, you have that responsibility and I take that very seriously.
Daniel Jones is always going to say the right thing. I don't think that's ever a guy that says the wrong thing. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. All right, we will take a break. When we come on back, I got some quotes from Stephon Diggs. We talked about him yesterday. The man has spoken, and he's done so on the shop. We'll get into that audio, or I'll read you the quotes next.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. So I'll just say this. Stephon Diggs, ever since the playoff game, it just feels bizarre with him and the Buffalo Bills. Now, let me be clear. I don't think he's going anywhere. He's not getting traded this offseason. So if you're speculating that, I don't necessarily agree with that. But you saw him very frustrated and yelling at Josh Allen towards the end of that playoff game. And that would be one thing. Then you keep on hearing this, like, oh, you want to play with your brother. And then naturally the cockroach Cowboy fans are like, oh, come to Dallas. Join us in Dallas. And then yesterday, you just got like some weird tweets by Stephon Diggs. Don't take things personal from people you don't know personally. It's just business. Don't take it personal. That's what they say, at least. So that's all over the place. I don't know what it is. And I was just reading on Pro Football Talk. I guess that Stephon Diggs was on the shop. And we'll get to those quotes in just a second. But you also got to remember here, Hickey, it got ugly at the end in Minnesota. And I'm not ready to say it's at that point yet, but you're at a point in time where it's like, I don't know what the heck is going on here. Because going into, and they just paid him too, but going into this season, I don't think anyone would even envision Stephon Diggs outside of a Bills uniform. But like now, even though I do not think it will happen this offseason, you do wonder with what you saw and how ugly it ended in Minnesota, how much longer is this relationship going to last in Buffalo? And I don't know, like maybe we are just prematurely speculating here. But it is something where the dead cap goes from $45 million this year to then $25 the next and $18 after that, and then $10 and $3, and then he's an unrestricted free agent going into 2028. But if somehow, let's say this just keeps on getting worse and worse and worse, would it surprise me in 2 years from now if he tries to get his way out of town? No. And then as great as Josh Allen is, you got to then go find a way to go get another big-time wide receiver. So I'll tell you what he said on the shop. He said, appearing on the shop, and this is from through Florio, Diggs said nothing about leaving his current team. He said plenty about his efforts to understand his current team's inability to fulfill its full potential. It doesn't make sense, Diggs said. I'll rack my brain with this bleep at this point. I think it's more execution than anything. Bleep is small little pieces on why it's not going right. We've got the players. We've got the plays. Why bleep ain't coming together? That's where you draw some of those questions. I never want to question who I am. I never want to question how I am. I'm giving this bleep everything I've got. I'm dying on the hill for that. Like, I hear that. That's a player that is annoyed. And I expect him to be annoyed. This was a Super Bowl or bust season for the Bills, and you didn't even get to the conference title game. You got smacked. Like, you didn't just lose on a field goal. You got smacked by the Bengals. And 2 years ago, like you look at the last three seasons. So they lose in the AFC title game. And then you saw that photo of Diggs on the field as Kansas City celebrates and goes to the Super Bowl, taking it all in. And it was like the I'll be back moment. But that was a positive season for the Bills. And then last year, you had the Chiefs beat and your defense couldn't get off the field in the final 13 seconds. Don't get me wrong. That's gut-wrenching. But then going into this season, it was like, oh, okay, everything has to come together. And I know that it was, I can't believe I'm going to say this, Hickey. I know that last year, you thought you couldn't get a worse loss than that because you had the game won and then victory was snatched away. But this year against the Bengals, I actually think was worse because you got embarrassed and you thought you were close. And a team that was in the Super Bowl a year ago but didn't get back to the Super Bowl this year not only went into your house, they went into your house. They put their asses on your couch. They put your feet up. They took everything out of your fridge. They made steaks in your house, devoured the steaks, then slept with your wife. And then the next morning just rolled out of town and left your house a mess. That's what the Cincinnati Bengals did to the Buffalo Bills. They basically had Project X in your house, and they didn't pay for any of the cleanup. So that one this year is tougher, I think, than losing to the Chiefs in a game that you basically had won in the divisional round. And who would have known if you then would have beat the Bengals after that? Probably not with the way that it went down this year.
Especially at home, and like I said, just outclassed. Outclassed in what was a Super Bowl or bust season. Your season comes to an end at home by a team that showed you you don't even deserve to be on the same field as them. I'm with you. And you hear Stephon Diggs. You see him at the end in Minnesota. What was it? Screaming at Kirk Cousins. You see him at the end of this year screaming at Josh Allen. Now, I think he has a lot more respect for Josh Allen than he did Kirk Cousins. That was part of the reason why his exit was expedited. But it's kind of a similar pattern of when things are not going his way or he's getting frustrated, he takes the blame out on the quarterback. He takes the blame out on others. And it kind of usually leads to a quick fuse and an exit. And Stephon Diggs, look, we've seen guys like Randy Moss be very talented, bounce around. Terrell Owens, kind of same thing. Like, Stephon Diggs is kind of in that class as well. Super talented, very fiery, kind of wears out his welcome faster than you would hope or faster than you would like.
Yeah, I do think the divorce is, though, a little bit cleaner than the other two. It's just like in the social media era now where he just does a lot of the bitching on social media.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I don't think he's getting traded this offseason. I don't think it's that bad yet. But like I said, it starts there. Like, there's a little fire festering, a little smoke starting to, flare up. You lose it. What if they lose in the division? What if they lose in the wild card round?
What happens
next
if the
year?
Jets get Rodgers and they lose the division? I don't think that's going to happen, but imagine if it does.
What if Josh Allen is another repeat of 2022, struggles in the red zone, doesn't play well, kind of all or nothing on offense. He's frustrated. They lose again.
Poyer doesn't come back. Edmonds is gone.
I will
say this, though, and I think this is going to surprise you. They are very dangerous for next year because now they go from the team that everyone was picking to win it to next year. No one's going to think they're going to stink. I'm sure everyone's going to still pick them to win the AFC East, but if the Jets get Rodgers, some people are then going to say, oh, the Jets are going to win the division, and they're going to use that as doubt. I don't think there's going to be a big push this year for people picking the Bills to go to the Super Bowl. They go get Derrick Henry, maybe that goes out the window. But if they don't drastically improve that run game, and let's say they lose a guy like Poyer, I think you'll see a lot more people gravitate towards the Bengals, the Chiefs to get to the Super Bowl. And like, if you want to throw a dark horse in there, then maybe someone will get like a little risky and go with the Jaguars.
Jaguars, Chargers. Yeah, I feel very safe saying the 85% of people that picked the Bills last year
ain't going to do it this year.
The number is not going to be 85% or 90%.
I'm going out on a limb here.
I know. Last year, you look back at August and July, it was insane.
Well, I said it in
insane.
I said it in May that I was going to pick them to go to the Super Bowl. And then I was on one of our affiliates in Rochester, and they had me on right before the start of the season. I go, guys, I'm changing my Super Bowl pick. And it's not because I don't believe the Bills are going to the Super Bowl, because I still did, but I'm picking someone else just because everyone's picking the Buffalo Bills. Now, the team that I picked, it was the Ravens, so that wasn't all that good. But it is what it is. So I want to see how this... We're going to learn a lot about Buffalo, because this is either going to be really pretty next year, or it's going to end with a big just thud, and it's going to be ugly. We'll see what happens. All righty, we'll break. We'll come on back. Nick Saban talks a little bit about retirement. And also, we got to get into the poll question. Aaron Rodgers, Lamar Jackson, if you're the Jets, who would you rather pursue? 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. On Twitter and Instagram, at Zach Gelb, Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B.